From what I've read, I understand the basic concept, but I still don't understand what nirvana is.
The meaning of nirvana.
And I don't understand karma.
Karma and nirvana, really important concept.
Yeah, I understand by reading what's been told that you should try to reach nirvana, but then how do you know if you've gotten there? And when you get there, what do you do after?
Do you mean that those are only the point that you have doubt?
No, it's not that I have doubt. I just don't understand. I understand if you have to get there, you have to extinguish your desire. But then, how do you know that you've gotten there? What does it feel like, or what do you do when you get there?
And no question about the basic principle of Buddhism.
Before Noble Truth?
The general principle of Buddhism. You have question also.
From what I've read, with the desire that you're not supposed to desire. You're not supposed to have desires or attachments?
Desire here means selfish desire. We can distinguish between two kinds of desire. But in the book, it might be that the two kinds of desires have not been distinguished, actually. Yes, there are two kinds of desire. One may be called wholesome desire or skillful desire. And the other one is the unwholesome or unskillful desire. Yes, there are two kinds of desire, as I have mentioned. The unskillful desire is what we call tanha in Pali or trishna in Sanskrit. I think you know some Sanskrit words, Sanskrit terms. Do you know some of the Sanskrit language? Tanha or Krishna is usually rendered in English as craving. It is the desire for what to satisfy our eye, ear, nose, tongue, bodily touch. In other words, we desire for the form, sound, taste, order, and smelling. And the transcendent objects that are pleasing, and also desire for the eternal existence of our life. On the opposite side, to decide for the extinction of our life. These are usually called ตัณหาออกเพศประเด็นดีสกุลปินสกินโพดีใจออกโหดสามดีใจอีสดีใจ for knowledgeThe desire for the knowledge of the truth. The desire for the good. It may be called desire for truth and desire for creation of anything good.And the skillful desire or wholesome desire is usually called chanta, C-H-A-N-D.
Okay.
And because of this skillful desire or chanta that we can strive for a goal of Nirvana, such as Nirvana.
The desire for Nirvana.
Yes, we can desire for Nirvana. Mm-hmm. But for the worldly, as we usually do not know what Nirvana is, therefore our desire for Nirvana is not a genuine one. Now, what is the meaning of Nirvana? Nirvana can be defined in many ways. Because we cannot give the direct or the real definition of Nirvana. Because Nirvana is not something that the worldly people know.It is beyond their knowledge. Anything that is not similar or the similar to or the same as what we have known is unknowable to us. We cannot have an idea of it directly. We can explain something to someone only when that thing has some similarities or something to compare. You have to have a concept of something. An already existing one. You have some existing concept in order to compare with something you have not already known. For example, a person does not know about an elephant.For example, he is in this part of the country where an elephant does not live, and he has not even seen a picture of it. And then someone comes and tells him that there is an elephant. That person has no idea of an elephant. And then the narrator begins to explain it. And then how can he explain about the elephant to the person? He has to use some concept that the person already knows. First,the man may begin with the explanation that an elephant is an animal. Okay, and an animal is something the person has known. he already has an idea of it. Yeah. Then okay, an elephant is an animal. Okay, that is right. And then he explained more. An elephant is a big animal. And big, and then big is also another concept he already has. And then he further explains that the elephant has four legs. Okay, a beast. And then the person understands more and more about the elephant. But he, in his mind, now the elephant may have a picture, maybe a picture of something like a horse, right? Yeah. And then the man further explains that the elephant is bigger than a horse, or something like that. Then he understands more and more. In spite of that, the person does not know the real picture of the elephant. And then the man has to go into the minute detail. The elephant is not like other animal. He is not like the horse. It's not like the buffalo or something like that. But for the buffalo or the deer, they have the what you call what? Claw, the throat, horn, yes, right? The, but the elephant does not have the horn, but it is, something that protrudes in front of it to one, and then and the nose of the elephant is very long, something like that, right? And then the person will have the picture of the elephant that is further and further modified. You can see this is the way a person can understand things which he all has not already known. And that is to compare with some concept he already has. But Nirvana is not similar, is not like anything worldly people know. How can we explain it to the worldly people? It is something beyond their understanding, beyond their knowledge. Therefore, there is the story of a simile of the turtle and a fish. Have you read it? No. Oh. A turtle is, what do you call, the animal that can go both on land and in the water, right? Amphibian. Yeah, it is an amphibian. But the fish can live only in the water. The story goes on that the turtle and the fish are friends. One day the turtle, after going on the land, came into the water, into the river, and met with the fish. And the fish asked the turtle, "Where did you go today?" The turtle told the fish that he went to travel on the land. The fish began to be perplexed, to be astonished, to have doubt. What is the land? And now the turtle tried to explain about the land, the meaning of the land, what is the land, to the fish. In every way the turtle explained the land to the fish could not understand. The fish only ask the turtle. You spoke about the walking on the land. You spoke about the breath and so on. But what is the breath? What is walking and so on? And the turtle could not explain because the fish has no concept to compare. Right. This is a simile of the turtle and the fish. And then in this case, we can compare the one who has attained to Nirvana to the turtle, and the worldly people are compared to the fish. But realizing it, what we can say is that Nirvana is the ultimate good or something like that. As we use the Latin word, summa bonum. Summa bonum, I think the term. Summa bonum, the ultimate good, or sometimes it's called the supreme bliss. But in many cases, it is explained in negative terms. As when the turtle tried to explain the land to the fish, usually the negative terms are used, right? It is not that, it is not this, right? In negative only. It is not water. It is not swimming. It is not, And therefore, Nirvana is mostly explained in negative terms. Usually the negation of the greed, hatred, desire, greed, hatred and delusion. And then in one way, Nirvana is defined as the extinction of greed, hatred and delusion. And it is also the non-existence of ignorance. It is the state that a person attains when he has eradicated ignorance or nuisance or NE science, right? Nuisance. Therefore, the enlightenment of the Buddha is also the attainment of the Nirvana, right? It is the same. This means a person has, the moment a person has eradicated this ignorance, he becomes, he attains to the Nirvana. A Buddha, right? A Buddha is the one who has attained to the enlightenment, attained to the knowledge of the truth, and at that moment he also attained to the Nirvana. In negative terms, the moment he eradicates the ignorance, he attained to the Nirvana. That is one, only the chain is only one aspect of the truth. Chain is an aspect or characteristic of on component things or conditioned things. Things that are conditioned are subject to change. Usually we say they have three characteristics. The characteristic of impermanence, the characteristic of stress or subject, being subject to stress or conflict, and the characteristic of what we call not self. This is one aspect of Buddhism that is very difficult to understand. Yeah. All things, we say all things, but in more strict term we say all conditioned things are impermanent, subject to stress and not self. Not self, S-E-L-F. Not self, this means they are subject to the law of conditionality. They go on according to causes and effects. They go on according to causes and conditions. Therefore, there is no such a thing as impermanent, a permanent soul. Therefore, not self is also translated as non-soul. S-O-U-L. Soul is an entity that is permanent. It does not change, right? In Buddhism, the Buddhists do not believe in a soul.
So
everything, every conditioned thing. Yeah. We not say everything, every conditioned thing is subject to this law of conditionality, or sometimes we call it the dependent origination. Things, all things in the world are subject to this law of the dependent origination. This may mean they occur according to causes and conditions. This is the truth of life and nature. But Nirvana is beyond this. But Nirvana is still not self.
There's no soul.
No soul. But Nirvana is not subject to change. Nirvana is not impermanent. This means Nirvana is permanent. Nirvana is not subject to stress, but it is not there. And this is based on the general principle that Buddhism teaches, the existence of all things in a way that it's subject to this law. This means there is no creator, there is no creation in Buddhism. The Buddha said, whether Buddha arrives or not, it is natural that things go on according to their causes and conditions. And this means the truth, the going on of nature, or nature itself, exists independently of the arising of the Buddha. Whether the Buddha arrives or not, things go on, usually, as they do. What is the status of the Buddha? The Buddha arose, he just discovered the truth, discovered the law, the truth of all things, and then he expounded, he taught it to the people. He made it easily understood to them. This person is called a Buddha. There is no supreme God. There is no creator. Of humankind or of the world, of the earth, of the cosmos.
Did the Buddha try to explain how we arrived on earth? Or how the earth
was
formed?
His teaching is like the evolution.
So the beginning really isn't that important?
No creation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He might say in this way that if God is not created, and then all things can be not created. How can God be without beginning? And then it is the same with all things. All things can be without any beginning. We usually apply the conventional idea or conventional concept to the way of nature. What is conventional way, conventional concept? We think of all things as having a beginning and an end, like this vessel. This is called pan in Thai, but what do you call it in English? Right. It is okay that you write here. What do you call? Okay, you can write it here. Oh, yeah. What would you call this in English? It is a register to translate. Yeah, it is a kind of vessel, right? Yeah. Or even a book, yes, it may be easier to explain it by way of taking this book as example. We think of this book as having a beginning and an end. Sometime before this, there was not this book. And then after some time, it was produced. And then after some time in the future, it will come to an end. There will be no book. This book. This book will be none. This is the conventional concept. Conventional concept, yes. Mm. But we do not think of the real truth. Mm. What is the real truth? This is only something existing conventionally in this form for this purpose. We call them books. And then when they appear in another form, we call them by another name. And then in this way, we have conventional concept of things. We can say the same or not, but the substance are material components. We can say the components. The components go on. And then we say this thing, this in Pali called Dhamma, the Dhamma. Dhamma. Dhamma, Dhamma, anything. It is very difficult to render this term into English. But I think now it begins to be used in the original term in English, the dharma, in Sanskrit, D-H-A-R-M-A. I think you have come across this term, right? Dharma. In Pali, it is dhamma, or D-H-A-M-M-A. Dhamma of dharma. Dhamma is very comprehensive, all inclusive. Cover all things. Anything is dhamma. Usually it is classified into two kinds of the corporeal dhamma and incorporeal dhamma. We may use more loose terms as material and immaterial. This dhamma exists
father time. We say about there's no beginning, no ending. The karma. Something natural. This we can say. We can use the English term as natural. And then it's able to go on. And then appear in different forms in the relationship. Because of the relationship, by way of the conditionality of sometimes we might use the term causation, right? By way of causation, causation CAUSATION, causation. But sometimes we do not use the term, we say that it is misleading. But loosely we can use the causation. Sometimes we wonder this law as the dependent origination. And then the Buddhist believe in the natural law of things. Then you have things or natural things, and then you have natural law or the truth of this natural thing. And then the third karma is all inclusive because it can refer to the things themselves. As this book, the flower, the tree, the earth, and so on. These are all karma. And they are natural things. And then we have the law or the truth of these natural things. How the tree grows, and so on. This is the truth of the law of the natural thing. This is also a meaning or not the meaning of the term karma. And then when we know the natural thing and the natural law or the law governing the natural thing, and then we can destroy what we call ignorance. The Buddha comes to the truth of all natural things. The general law of nature. Right. Everything. But everything, what is everything? When a scientist understand things, they understand specific things, but it's not sufficient, this is not enough. They have to know the general law or general principle. This is what the scientists need. They want to attain to the general law. Now they have made effort for many thousands and many hundred years to come to this general law. That is the way to think of this general law. That things go on according to that process and condition. This can be called a general law. The aspect of the general law can be described in three. All conditioned things are impermanent, as I already mentioned to you. On condition things are impermanent, on condition things are subject to stress, and on things are not self. No self. In one the Buddhism is called the not sure I wish you know something like that. And they have potential. Potential. We cannot say, and now most of them have not appeared to it. But they have the potentiality. But this is about the nature of man also, the nature of human beings. All human beings have potential or potentiality for the enlightenment. And it will also be so that all human beings are turnable or touchable beings. They have to be turned.
They have to be educated. And therefore education is all that is needed by human beings. Education is the life of human beings. The life means the good life that should be, lived. The life that should be lived by human beings is the life of education. Between everyone should train themselves in order that he or she can diminish and finally eradicate the ignorance and come to the knowledge of the truth of nature and also the attainment of nirvana. And then when we have eradicated the nirvana, we can attain to what we call freedom, peace, happiness, and anything good. Therefore, the nirvana is sometimes called freedom. Freedom and also peace, and also happiness. We can say that these are all of them are aspects of nirvana. Happiness is one aspect of nirvana. Freedom is another aspect. Peace also an aspect of nirvana. Therefore, in many cases, the Buddha speaks of nirvana as peace. When we have come to knowledge of things, we realize the nature of all things, we have peace of mind. And we are free from all defilements. It is natural. We do not say time. We say it would be natural for them to be beyond this child life, that child life. Once the Buddha comes to the attainment of knowledge and the higher state of life in the way we live first as an infant, a child. The first, the newly born children, they seek for happiness. They enjoy themselves, even with their own existence. They enjoy themselves, and then after some time, they change. They enjoy themselves with the toys, and they grow up, and then they do not enjoy themselves with toys, When they were children, they enjoy pretty soon when they have toys. And they like the toy very much. They will suffer very much if they are separated from the toy. And then they play with the sun and so on.
and after some time they grow up. And then they do not enjoy themselves with this time. And then they look at the boys and girls playing with the time. And they laugh in the mouth, something like that, right? Yeah. And then after enjoying themselves with the time, they enjoy themselves with other people and the way of many people. And then when these people grow up even more in the mind, then they do not find enjoyment in this house, in this nothing. They will have happiness inside. They do not seek for happiness. They do not seek for pleasure. You can see that we usually use the term of seeking for happiness, seeking for pleasure. It implies that we do not already have it in ourselves. We seek for them, we seek for it. And after educating ourselves, after the attainment of higher truth, the attainment of the Nirvana, we have in ourselves, we already have it in the mind, the happiness, hatred. And then we do not seek for excellent happiness.
And these people who are called the Arahant, I think you have come across the term in the book, the Arahant or Arahant. The Arahant, the accomplished one who has attained to the truth. And when you look at the worldly people enjoying themselves in the world as they grown up, look at the children playing with their time. They do not want to enjoy themselves in that time. It does not mean that they cannot. It is not right. Now, when they already have happiness inside, they are happy all the time. And we say that they have finished the education. They have completed the course of training, and then they finish. There is nothing that they need to do for themselves. Contentment on anything, because now they have finished the course, right, of training. They have already inside themselves the happiness. They have freedom. They have peace. And therefore, there is nothing they need to do for themselves. Therefore, they live the rest of their life for all mankind. They can do now because they have no concern for themselves, right? People have concern for themselves because they seek for happiness, they seek for pleasure. There are many things for them to do. They need to do many things for themselves. Therefore, we can only train ourselves to do for other people. Now, we try, we train ourselves to do this and that for other people. We try to be good. We have to try to train ourselves. But for those who have attained to the truth, when they are happy inside, they have nothing to do for themselves, they can reward all the time for the happiness of other people, and this is the way of the Buddha. But the Buddha and Arahant are for people who have nothing to do for themselves. When you are happy in themselves, you have all the time happy in happiness inside. You are happy to do everything.
that is the one. That is the way of life of the one who has appeared in the world. The person who has appeared in Nirvana, there is no work for him anymore. Because he attained to the thing that the worldly people do not understand. There is no concept to compare, right? And this means the personality, even the personality has been changed. Because of this attainment. But in the worldly term or in conventional term, we say that for this person there is no afterlife. But it may be misleading because some may think that, oh, then he goes to extinction or nothing more. And then that is the other extreme. So then he goes beyond the extreme, the two extremes of existence and non-existence. No reincarnation, no rebirth in the conventional term. No. Does not exist in the worldly way, in the way of the ordinary people, in the usual concept of people. Now, we can refer again to the simile of the turtle and the fish, with whom the person has gone out of the sea. He has gone out of the water. He don't even be afterlife for the ordinary people. But it wouldn't still be called for the worldly people rebirth. But there is no rebirth for the Buddha or the Arahant. Karena udung pun ikhlas in some different way. Because the Buddha was born in that time when the term Karena was used. Then he had also produced it, but he used it in another meaning. Karma, the term itself, literally means just an action, right? An action or a deed. Then people have bodily action, verbal action, and mental action, or thinking of that. Then produce bodily action and thought of thinking, all are karma. But whether you think, speak, act physically, you have done things. That is how the volition, V-O-R-I-T-I-N, volition, or Itali Chetana, Chetana, C-E-T-A-N-A, Chetana, volition or will or choice or intention, or it is difficult to render it in English. We try to by an exception for it. You can use volition, will, or choice, or intention. Yes, we have it. And then out of this intention, we act, we speak, we think with this intention. And that karma in more exact meaning is this religion. Yeah. Therefore, the Buddha described Dhamma as Chetana. That is the core of our action. And then, now you can see that people perform Dhamma all the time by thinking, speaking, and bodily action. And then, with this Dhamma, intention of religion, expressed by way of thinking, ideas, speaking, and physical action, human beings have created a world. This is called human world, the society. And then we created on type of academic discipline. We have created culture, civilization, technology, language, and so on. And this is called the world of man. And then the world of society will go on according to the Tamil. And this is what the Buddha said. Tamina Ratati Lekho. The world of society of man goes on according to human Dhamma. Right? And therefore the world of man is the world of Dhamma. This is Dhamma is very good. And therefore Dhamma is the process of the transition and the conditionality of the action and effectuation. We think and then we reap the result of our thoughts. Yeah. And then it is the process of causes and results, causes and effects. And then this process of causes and effects go on. It may be in this life or before this life. But the source of everything is on this life. The person, because it is the time that we can do. We can be with, we can manage. For the past life, we cannot do anything with it. That's a Buddhism place the emphasis on this life. And the Buddha said, the world or the human society according goes on according to the Dhamma of people. People perform horticulture, cultivation, they become merchants and traders, they become the administrators, kings, rulers, and so on. And then this is what leads the way of society and the world. And this is the essence of Dhamma. Some aspects may be similar. Because when we speak of the Dhamma of the society, then we speak in very broad terms. And then we can speak in narrow terms to refer only to the life of an individual, and an individual. Something like the fate or destiny of the life of a person. And also the life of a person goes on according to his or her own Dhamma also. in relationship with his or her environment. We think, we speak, we act physically, and then we reap the result of what we have thought, spoken, and acted. And then we form our personality, and then our personality comes into relationship with other people. We have reaction or reaction.